Hi, my name is Enrique Mendizábal, and I am the director of On Think Tanks. This is the OTT Makeshift podcast. In this episode, I talk to Rose Abdulusadeh from Chatham House, and she tells us about a fantastic new project they have called Futurescape, where they bring the power of imagination into the heart of a think tank. I do really recommend that you listen to the podcast and then visit Chatham House's website to find out more. Please do enjoy. So I am here with Rose from Chatham House, and we are going to be talking about a very interesting project that Chatham House launched this year, but I know I've been working on for quite some time, and I first heard about this when I learned about Chatham House's preparations for their centenary. So it's very exciting to learn more about this project, Futurescape. Rose, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and your work at Chatham House first?
Sure, thanks very much for inviting me to chat to you about our Futurescape project. My name's Rose, and I'm the Managing Director for Research Partnerships at Chatham House, which involves a range of things, one of which is managing the SNF Collab, which we launched earlier in 2020. I've lost track of years because we've had a year of nothing, but we were able with funding from the Stavros Niarchos Foundation to create a fund which will last for 10 years at Chatham House, and the whole aim of it is for us to try out doing experimental and immersive outputs and create new partnerships with organizations and individuals that we don't normally work with or haven't traditionally worked with, to try and reach a broader audience and bring far more people into the discussion on some of the big global issues that we're grappling with and talking about, and engaging policymakers and business people and civil society and media in, but how can we also take those conversations to the general public and present them in a way where people find it engaging and memorable? So the Futurescape model is one of the first outputs from the SNF Collab. And as you're right, we started it as a centenary project. So Chatham House was 100 years old in 2020. And we have been doing obviously a lot of looking into our history and looking at the old black and white photos of the old men sitting around the tables. But we also wanted to do something that looked forward and thought about what could Chatham House be working on for the next 100 years? And what types of issues are we working on right now that are going to be manifesting and playing out over the next 100 years? And what decisions are we all grappling with in terms of policy development and the shape of our societies and communities and global governance that are going to affect society in the future? And one of the things that we really wanted to do with this was to create a positive image of the future, because a lot of what you see think tanks do is sort of doom and gloom risk analysis. And we thought maybe we could create something that made you at least feel like, well, there are things we can do now to really build a positive future. And also, if you don't like what we've created, then that's absolutely fine. I mean, that's the purpose of it, really, is to get people thinking about what future they would like to be living in, or they would like their children to be living in, or grandchildren to be living in, because that's really the only way that we can guide the decisions that we're making right now.
I think the best thing for people to do is to go into the website, so we'll share the link. Because it's very visual, very interactive. But can you describe more or less what we...
Yeah, sure. So the link is just futurescape.chathamhouse.org. You can also go to our website and find it through the website. And it's a sort of guided journey through the next 100 years with... you stop off for... There's four different time zones: 2035, 2060, 2090, and 2121. And you follow a family through two generations who are all Londoners living in the centre of London. And there are, it's basically like a 3D model, an immersive model, and then there are points at which you can stop and read more information about what's happening now at the moment towards this trend, and some deep dive links into some work by Chatham House and work by others as well that are looking into the policy questions around these developments. So it focuses on themes like how technology will impact society. We've called that themes of technology for humanity. So how can we be shaping technology in a positive light to really support some of the collective goals that we have, shifting to a better food system, tackling climate change, and bringing nature into our city centres. Realising a sustainable economy. So there's a fair amount in there around circular economy and different types of economic activity as well, changing our consumption habits, basically. And then also, which is kind of a bit off-piste for Chatham House, stuff around storytelling, community, and also well-being. And I guess that links partly to the fact that we were running it through the pandemic. I mean, initially our idea had been for it to be very climate change focused. That's a big area of work at Chatham House in general. We'd been thinking about rewilding Piccadilly Circus, how cool that would be. But as we, the process that we went through to get to the model and get to the scenarios that play out in the model was a series of workshops with some staff members, but also a wide variety of architects, of sustainability advisors, of people working on sort of new materials, people looking at transport, people in the insurance industry looking at big trends. So people looking at biodiversity. So there were a lot of external experts that we brought in through a couple of workshops. And then that was all, the first of those was like right at the time when people were saying, maybe I don't want to come to your meeting because there's this virus going around. And then the second of the workshops was the let's try out doing something on Zoom. No one really knows how any of the buttons work. And then after that, we did quite a lot of surveying as well. So we developed the models and then we surveyed groups to figure out how likely they thought they were, and also where they thought they would fit within the time horizons that we were talking about. So like, what changes are we likely to see quite soon? What changes are we likely to see much further out? So we've got things in there about, for example, Piccadilly Circus becoming pedestrianised, which most people we talk to think will happen within the next 10, 15 years. I mean, there are already plans afoot to pedestrianise quite large parts of central London, and obviously you're seeing that in other cities anyway. It's just about when and how. And then there are other things like buildings that are picking up on the sentiment of the community around them through AI, and sort of able to very quickly and automatically change their shape depending on weather patterns and things like that. And those types of things we're assuming are going to be further out from where we are at the moment. So that's, I think that was kind of the process. And then we had an internal group of around 35 different researchers and people working in our communications team and membership teams, all looking at the beta versions of the models as they were coming out to comment and to help us refine and get to the point that we got to at the end.
And something that's, I mean, it's a fascinating process, but one of the things that I found really interesting is you're in the model, and in what you see in Futurescape is you see commentary around about the world, right? The world changing.
Yeah.
The focus is very local, right? You're focused on Piccadilly Circus, right? And for Chatham House, which is seen as a global affairs organization, that's thinking about the world rather than about something so local. Mm-hmm. It seems a bit of one of those one of those messages that captures your attention. Like, oh,
yeah.
Interesting. Well, I mean, was that on purpose? Was that just part of the way the decision making came about? Or just was that a design suggestion? Why the focus on local? I think anybody would have expected you guys to be thinking about looking at the world and how the world is changing, right? The geopolitics and what's going on in Africa and in Latin America. But actually, you look at something so close by. And for those who do not know, Piccadilly Circus is around the corner from Chatham House. Is your local, your neighborhood?
That is. It is our local area. And that's exactly it. When we were starting on this project with the idea of big global trends and what will the shape of the world be like over the next 100 years, we went back to this idea of it being immersive and it being actually tangible and something that people could relate to. And we had a number of conversations about how can you apply trends to a physical place. How can we make these conversations far more tangible than they are normally? And so actually locating these trends in somewhere where you can imagine that you would be, that anyone can imagine that they would be, became part of the approach, because we felt that it would make it far more immersive and far more interesting and just accessible than some kind of like trends report or like index with, you know, various globes and arrows on it. We chose Piccadilly Circus because, as you say, it is our local neighborhood. So we thought, well, where better to think about how these trends are going to play out than right where we are right now, and where people, hopefully in 100 years time, if Chatham House is still going, they'll be coming to work as well, and they'll be getting off the tube, if there's still a tube, and walking around the corner to the office. So that's why we decided to locate it in our immediate surroundings. And we're lucky as well that Piccadilly is somewhere that people kind of at least have seen a picture of. So it's not.
It makes me think that, is it possible to take the model and the kind of the science behind it, right? The science that is sort of providing the evidence behind it, to and apply that to Times Square, to Puerta del Sol in Madrid, Plaza 2 de Mayo in Lima. You know, would that be possible? Yeah. Would we be able to take that from Chatham House and say, let me try it out in my local?
That's community? It. Yeah, that's actually one of our ideas behind the next phase of this project, is to kind of provide a bit of a framework for people to do that themselves if they'd like to, just to map out the questions and the sort of process that we went through, and to say how much of it was like not related to the place and how much of it was related to London and to the West End of London. Because we would love to see other futurescapes based in other big major squares or city centres, as you say. And we all know that, we're all becoming far more urban, and that is one of the big known global trends, that we will be living in cities, even sort of pandemic, the pandemic might kind of balance that out a little bit. But in general terms, the majority of people are going to be living in cities. And so thinking specifically about urban centres, I think, is the types of problems that are potentially common and the types of problems that are really unique and localized, I think it's would be a lovely way for the project to develop.
And that'd be interesting to see how that evolves, right? You might actually see some convergence in different parts of the world, and then some divergence even further than we are today, with some cities handling these changes in one way and others different way, but also others not being able to handle those changes.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the kind of climate impact, which will be differential, and you've also got the societies themselves and the sort of change that they're willing and happy and interested in seeing, or that they are going to resist, particularly when it comes to technology or comes to potentially transport systems or food. You know, we have in our Piccadilly, we've got a world-renowned insect emporium. I don't think it's called an emporium, but it's like a food hall where you can go and find the most luxurious insects. And I mean, in many parts of the world, that wouldn't be that weird. And in the UK, that it would be very, very strange for people to imagine that we'd be eating insects anytime soon.
When is that supposed to be happening?
That's in the 2060.
Okay.
In the 2060 time frame. But we also start to have like hydroponic farming happening in Piccadilly Circus that then is feeding those all the restaurants and the and Soho and that sort of thing, which is far, you know, which is quite close, potentially, probably not bang in the middle of Piccadilly Circus, but some of that stuff is already happening in small ways.
This is early, but what is the impact? What has been the impact of this project?
So the one of the things that we found has been that we have been able to reach out to totally different groups of audience that them have heard of us before. And there's been, we created a hashtag on Twitter for people to either say whether they liked it or didn't. And that's been quite lively. And it's been good to see the people that say like, no, this is awful. Oh, this is creepy. And these kinds of things, because that's exactly the conversation you want to try and evoke. And we are now thinking about how to make it a physical installation. So we're going to do a, all fingers crossed with, you know, social distancing and things, we'll have a physical version of it in Chatham House over the summer. And we'll also take it to Athens for the Nostos, for Stavros Niarchos Foundation Nostos Festival in August. And that will be an attempt as well to try and ask locals in Athens, to what extent do they think any of these trends are applicable or most applicable to their thinking about the future of their city?
Do you think that the space itself has, I mean, this is a mundane question, but has it generated traffic towards certain bits of research that Chatham House produces or certain areas of work?
Yes, it has. It has. And it's also been a really good sort of cross promoter in a sense. So we've been able to link people through to parts of other parts of our content that are relevant on, you know, on urban design or on sustainability themes in particular, some stuff around and technology and space as well. And then see how long people spend on it, on the site, on the model itself, see how much they click through. So in that sense of it being like a kind of alternative version of an output, it's been a really useful experiment for us to see what works.
And within Chatham House, you mentioned, you know, you had a group of researchers, you know, within Chatham House comment on this and provide feedback. What has been the response? I mean, is this a motivator for many? Is this a kind of a project they want to contribute to?
So all of our stuff with the SNF Collab has been really interesting. We've found some researchers find it quite difficult at this time to look at positive outcomes.
say positive, but I mean, you do talk about, you know, the sort of sea levels rising.
Yeah, flooding.
I think, you know, you could go around in a canoe in Piccadilly Circus or worry about it. So positive in the sense that we're responding positively. Yeah, we're managing positively, but you know, the world is not all perfect in
that's
in
true. The,
yeah.
Yeah. And I think like all things, it's a really good experiment to see certain people are always going to be up for something new and trying something, and for others we'll have to show that this does work in terms of bringing new audiences in and really having an impact in terms of our outreach, and then they'll start to get on board with it. But yeah, I talked about it a little bit at the On Think Tanks conference, that my approach has basically been to find champions and to sort of create a bigger pool of champions over time within the organization, rather than trying to get everybody on board with it. But the reception has been brilliant. So yeah, I'm hoping we can do much more of this kind of thing.
It's interesting. I mean, at the conference, the title of the session you were involved in was about imagination, right? It's about and I often feel that you know, if you're looking at the past all the time, are you looking at what's happened?
Yeah.
You're making recommendations that have to be plausible, that have to be, you know, financially sane and politically viable. You sort of curb your imagination a little bit, right? You keep it at bay. But these kind of projects, you know, in a way, let you just, you know, let it flourish and see what comes out.
That's it.
It's a pleasure to go through it, like to navigate through the space that you have created, and I would look forward to see if I ever can come back to London to see a physical version of this as well.
Yeah, well, we have at the moment in London in Somerset House, which is a big old entirely stone public building. Initially, I think it was government building, but now is an exhibition space. The London Design Biennale is on this month, and Ez Devlin, the creative director, has created a forest in the middle of the courtyard there with the it's all around the SDGs. And so it was great to go there and say, oh, look, like this is a bit like our Piccadilly Circus, where you've got somewhere that's just concrete right now, all stone and grey, and they've covered it in nature, and it looks brilliant and people love it. So it's really nice to see.
Do you think more of this happened? Do you think more of this is gonna happen? More kind of these interventions, installations, exhibits being led by think tanks, being thought through by think tanks as a way of you know, making a statement, but also reaching out to a much, much wider audience?
I think so. I think it's a no-brainer, because it's also just about your like theories of change in terms of your influence and who your audiences are. And we all know that if we want policymaking to improve, then the numbers of people that are involved in those conversations has to expand. And we need to be getting all parts of society and community involved in shaping our sort of solutions and our ideas for the way forward. And we can't do that by, you know, giving commentary on just to media and to putting out reports and things. It's just not like that's a very useful and targeted way of having impact in a specific way, on a specific topic. But if you want to try and shape a general conversation, I really feel that we need to be working in more creative ways and not necessarily have think tanks doing it all themselves. Like we've worked with the London Design Biennale this year to do this other exhibition, and working in partnership with others is always, a really good way to reach new audiences and to do something in a different way. And I'm sure we'll see far more of that from think tanks going forward.
Great. This has been very interesting and fascinating. And it reminds me again of Anne-Marie Slaughter's keynote at our conference, talking about think tanks becoming change hubs. And
yeah,
I think what you've described is more or less what she was describing, bringing people, institutions, organizations from different walks of life, different disciplines, different sectors to come up with, you know, a better understanding of the world and solutions to the challenges and opportunities we face, and not necessarily expecting that all the best ideas are going to come just from us, right? With our own tools and our own ways of thinking. So I think this is a great example of a collaboration, where think tanks can play a leading role. And I think it would be fantastic if that collaboration extended to the think tanks around the world who want to replicate this with you in their own cities. I think I was quite excited about the idea that, you know, a global think tank would be looking at their own neighborhood. And I think others can certainly do that as well. So then, thank you very much, Rose. This was very useful. I will share the link to the initiative on our website, and I do encourage everybody who's listening or watching this to visit it and explore it in your own time.
Thank you. And for anyone listening and who wants to help with trying it out in different cities, please just find me on LinkedIn and don't hesitate to be in touch.
Great.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Now let me stop recording. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Rose and that you will visit Chatham House's website to find out more about FutureScape. See you soon.